Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a Friday. What a performance. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Yes, Hulk Hogan in 40 minutes from now. You know I love Russell Wilson. You know I'm from the Pacific Northwest. You know he comes on the show. Last night was a real treat for me. And it got me thinking driving to work this morning. When you put in a certain number of hours doing something, it becomes part of you. You see somebody with a skateboard at 18 years old, and you're like, God, they're magical on that thing. But they've been doing it since they were five. So 13 years of living and sleeping with that skateboard at night. I went to Vegas a couple of weeks ago, and I watched a 31-year-old magician named Matt Franco. He's doing it since he's six. 24 years of card tricks. You could not separate his hand from cards. He was so comfortable. There was no panic or no stress. Russell Wilson was allowed as a little guy to be a quarterback in high school. And so for 2 years of high school and 4 years of college and now 8 years of the NFL, it is 14 years of playing one style of football. He's never had to change for anybody because he was always small and he's still small. And he's got his style and this is how he plays and it is magical. With Michael Vick, I had running Michael and pocket Michael. And Lamar Jackson, I've got running Lamar and pocket Lamar. And with Russell Wilson, I can't separate it. I can't separate it. It's just the way he plays. It's the 17-year-old. You can't separate his foot from the skateboard. The magician, you can't separate the hand from the deck of cards. It's part of them. Russell's style, there isn't running Russell and pocket Russell. This is it. It's even in the pocket he's moving and crazy and clever and crafty. Here's one of his specialties last night.
On first down, Wilson keeps. Surveys, nowhere to go, and back in the end zone. Touchdown! What a catch by Tyler Lockett.
Catch, feet.
That is unbelievable.
On the run, running to his wrong side. When you've been doing something for so long, Russell Wilson once told me as a kid growing up, he would go to malls and run at the crowd and bob and weave through the crowd. 5 years old, 6 years old, that's what he's doing. A lot of quarterbacks have to change their style or they grow and they evolve. He's just been refining this for 14 years. Because even in high school, he was the smallest guy and the coaches said he's too small to be a quarterback. And then he goes to college and they're like, he's 5'11", he's too small to be a quarterback. And then he drops in the third round, he's too small to be a quarterback. For 14 straight years, he's been sandpapering this gift, this style, and it hasn't changed for anybody. It didn't change for his high school coach. It didn't change for his two college coaches. It's not changing for Pete Carroll. This is magic. And it really did remind me, 3 weeks ago, I took my son to a magic trick. Matt Franco, he's a great magician. He's a card master. And he sat in front of us, and cards just appeared out of his hands. Rolled his sleeves up, and he said, no cards. And then for 7 minutes, 12 decks appeared in and out of his hands. You've got to be doing that for 25 years. You go to bed with cards. There are running quarterbacks. I don't even classify Russell Wilson as a running quarterback. It's just that's his style. That's what he is. I don't know what you call that. But even in his pocket, he's dancing and he's moving and he's finding space and he's finding lanes because he's smaller. It's the most unique thing I've ever seen. Steve Young's the only one I can even compare it to. But all these people, the Johnny Manziels and the Michael Vicks we consider running quarterbacks, no. They would go back to pass and sometimes run. This is just one style. I can't separate it. And when people are truly great at something, they never stress or they never panic because they have so many hours doing it. Steph Curry and the ball, he never looks at it. It's just part of it. Michael Jordan I used to watch Michael Jordan and think, God, there's 75 guys in the NBA that are 6'6". They're all kind of built like Michael. He's not the only one that could jump. Dominique Wilkins could jump higher. He wasn't the strongest. He wasn't the biggest. Why does it look so effortless? Why can't every 6'6 guy shoot a fallaway jumper like that? He wasn't the best dribbler. He wasn't the highest jumper. But it was effortless for Michael. And you watch and you're like, why is it? I watched Russell last night and I'm like, why is it? It's just, he never gets hit. He never panics. He never stresses. He slides perfectly. His self-awareness is amazing. And I guess this, they used to call it, Malcolm Gladwell wrote the book, The 10,000-Hour Rule. I think this is the 14-year rule with quarterbacks. That this kid, Russell Wilson, has been doing this for 14 years. He has perfected it. When the Rams gave up 55 points to Jameis Winston, you hang your head. I think last night you give up 30 to Russell and you're like, well, we did the best we could. I think there are people inside that room that think, hey, we went from 55 to Jameis to 30 to Russell. What a night for us. Because I don't think you can solve this riddle. I don't think you can solve Russell. I don't think you can coach against it. I watched that game last night with former Jets and Browns head coach and Patriot defensive coordinator Eric Mangini. And he watched it, and on multiple times he laughed. He's like, this is just a nightmare. Because Eric's a defensive coach. He goes, this is awful. You can't defend this stuff. There's nothing you can do. And he kept going to his phone, and he'd say, look at the night he's having. Look at the night he's having. Look at the night he's having. That was a showcase. That was a great magician. That was something you're not, and that may have been as good as he ever played. Incredible. So I want to shift gears to the LA Rams, because all I've been hearing now, you know, Jared Goff is really holding this team back. I mean, they're great, but if they could get the right quarterback, Jared Goff's fine. In fact, last night, he's the only thing I absolutely loved. Didn't love all their coaching, couldn't run the football. I got questions about the back end of their defense. Goff's the thing I like. Here's the thing. There is a big difference between coddling a quarterback, Mason Rudolph, Monday Night Football, Mitch Trubisky and Kirk Cousins only throw 10 times. That is babysitting a quarterback. There's a difference between that and, once again last night, asking Jared Goff to throw 50 times. That ain't coddling. There's a difference between coddling my kids, don't do this, don't do that, and then saying, guys, I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks. Just make sure the house doesn't burn down. That ain't coddling. Folks, he's caring. He's not coddling. Their defense has issues on the back end. Didn't love all their coaching. Special teams missed a kick they should make. They have no running game at all. Todd Gurley, 15 carries, 51 yards. In fact, they ran last night for 82 yards, a third of it on one play, a trick end around to Brandon Cooks. Their offensive line is old, very low graded on pass blocking. Once again, we're blaming the wrong person. Jared Goff, at the end of that game, was excellent. He was Tom Brady, cool, calm, and collected. With a pass rush, an eroding offensive line, no running game. I thought he was excellent. I thought he looked like Brady in a playoff game. Totally under control. Never stressed or panicked. So you keep thinking Goff's the problem. He's the one thing I like going forward. I like their receiving core, and I like Goff, and I like how they're conjoined. And after the game, I mean, again, a lot of people are freaking out this morning. The Rams are 3-2. The reason I think they're okay, I looked at their next 8 games. It's not the O-line. It's not the run game. It's not Marcus Peters blowing another coverage. It's Jared Goff. Here's him after the game.
We've been 3-2 before and made the playoffs 2 years ago. And if I remember correctly, the Patriots were 3-2 last year and won the Super Bowl. And so there's a lot of game left. You know, we've got a really good group in there. And we're going to bounce back. We're fine. You know, obviously you don't want to lose 2 in a row at any point. But we got another big Division I next week, so we got no time to waste.
They've asked him to throw the ball 117 times in 2 weeks. By the way, the Rams are 25-3. 25-3. When they've simply asked Goff to throw it less than 40 times. And a lot of those are 36. That's not coddling. That's not protecting. That's not babysitting. Mason Rudolph, Monday Night Football's babysitting. Mitch Trubisky's babysitting. Kirk Cousins, they win 10 throws. That's babysitting. That fourth quarter drive with 2 minutes left, that ain't babysitting. That's Brady. That's a veteran quarterback marching down the field. That's Brady. That's Breeze. That's a guy that's been around a long time, rolling out, making plays, more athletic than you think. Cool, calm, noisiest stadium outside of New Orleans in the National Football League. Pete Carroll's one of the best defensive coaches outside of Belichick in the NFL. And you're telling me that's the liability? I'm showing you that's the liability. That's the strength. That I trust. His dad played Major League Baseball. He's way more of an athlete than everybody contests. I keep hearing he's not an athlete. You keep telling me Baker Mayfield's an athlete. He runs a 4.8 40. Jared Goff's dad played in Major League Baseball. That's an athlete. He made two really athletic throws last night down the stretch.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
The other big game this weekend, of course, is Green Bay at Dallas. That'll be one of my blazing five picks in 40 minutes. And, you know, Jason Garrett facing Aaron Rodgers. Once again, he tells everybody, like everybody always does, how talented Aaron Rodgers is.
He's really good in the pocket. He's really good out of the pocket. He's really good on time. He's really good when the play breaks down. He is. Go back and look at his career. You guys know the stats better than I do, but I bet his rating is better than anybody who's ever played the game. His touchdown to interception ratio better than anybody who's ever played in the game. All that stuff. He's a really good player.
Yeah, how come he doesn't win more? He's become Johnny Depp. You keep telling me what a great actor he is. I don't go to his movies unless he plays a pirate. And I don't think Aaron's going to do that. You got to win more. Aaron Rodgers, last 3 years, 13 wins, 13 losses, and a tie. He's 500. Aaron Rodgers, career road record, 40-41. But Colony's been hurt. Yeah, so's Marcus Mariota. And in the last 3 years, Marcus Mariota has a higher winning percentage than Aaron Rodgers. Win more, Chief. I'm tired of the condescending. I'm tired of difficult to coach. I'm tired of the commercials. Win more games, Aaron. By the way, when it comes to close wins, Russell Wilson, 18-12-1, games decided by a field goal or less. Aaron Rodgers, 10-19-1. Okay, Johnny Depp, here's another $20 million for a movie I won't watch. Win more. Matt Ryan last year had unbelievable numbers, 35 touchdowns. 7 interceptions, 69% completion percentage. But you know why we didn't talk about him? Those were equal to his MVP numbers. Why? He didn't win. He was 7-9. Why didn't we talk about Patrick Mahomes in college? You ever seen Patrick Mahomes' college numbers? He threw for like 5,000 yards. They were unbelievable. A zillion touchdowns, very few picks. Why? Because in college, his last year, they were 5-7. Aaron's the only guy that we keep hearing how great he is and he doesn't win enough. He's a 13-13-1 quarterback last 3 years. And I don't want to hear about the injuries in coaching. Marcus Mariota's been injured. Does he have great coaching? Does he always have great teammates? I don't want to hear about it anymore. I mean, we didn't talk about Mahomes in college. We talked about Baker Mayfield because he won. Mahomes is way more talented, didn't win. We don't talk about Matt Ryan when he has great numbers. You've got to win games, and you've got to win close games, and you've got to win road games. Talent doesn't pay the bills. Winning does. And that's my thing on Aaron Rodgers. Russell Wilson last night, 8 years. I've got 2 Super Bowls, 3 division titles, and 18-12-1 in close wins. And never hurt. And gets along with mostly everybody. And has great leadership skills. And never gets hit. So you get into the point now that I'm putting up with a lot with Aaron. I'm putting up with kind of the attitude. I put up with the ego. He's difficult on coaches. He can be difficult on. And now I'm just not getting enough winning. Again, Johnny Depp's great when he's a pirate. Aaron's pretty good at Lambeau. But I need more than that at $35 million a year. You know, everybody said, oh, how do you justify Russell Wilson's contract? I don't know. I watched last night. That's justifiable. I can easily justify that. Yeah, my eyes are like, yeah, I'll pay that. Here's what I won't pay. 40-41 on the road. Bad in close games. Hurt a lot. Tough to coach. That I don't want to pay for. 3-10 on the road last 3 years. 1-7 on the road last year. Talent isn't getting my kids through college. Winning is. Coaches get fired if you don't win. Coaches don't retain their jobs because, you know, my roster over here, we got nothing but talent. Mark Jackson said that. They fired him. Steve Kerr came in and won. They kept him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
All right, what's the latest on the Hulkster? Oh, he is. All right, let's bring him in. He's got quite a posse here. All right, here we go. WWE SmackDown, the Hulkster. By the way, the Mount Rushmore. We talked about there are very few people in the history of sports.
Uh-oh.
don't you come on over here? Come on over here, Hulk. Yeah, I used to work out.
I used to work out at
a gym in Clearwater, Florida.
No way. Which gym?
It was a gym that the Killer Bees used to work out in.
Gold's Gym.
Yeah, Gold's Gym. And they used to say, this is where Hulk works out. So I used to go there all the time. And you got too big. You were never there. You had your own gym by then.
Well, I had a place at my house.
That's what they said.
In the garage.
And
so
had
yeah.
You had the speedboat. You go, you know, you did your own thing in Clearwater. That's right.
I'm still doing it.
I got a question for you. I asked Snoop Dogg this 2 days ago. When did you go from wildly successful wrestler? When was the first moment, Hulk, for you that you knew walking out of your house, going to a store, it had all changed? You were global. You were a superstar. And you just couldn't go out and hang out and have a beer with buddies.
Well, the first 8 years, you know, we were doing the 300 miles one way to 300 miles back for $25 a night, $20, sometimes $30. And I did that for a long time. And then I went to New York with the old WWE.
Right.
Wrestled Andre Shea Stadium, but it was still the wrestling company, you know, beer drinkers, cigar smokers. Then I went and did a Rocky movie. The movie played. Things were still the same, you know. Wrestling company, beer drinkers, even though the perception was, oh my gosh, there's Hulk Hogan and Sylvester Stallone. Is that what a wrestler really looks like? But all of a sudden, on January 23rd, 1984, when Vince McMahon took over his father's company, the WWE, and I wrestled the Iron Sheik in Madison Square Garden, Iran was holding like 444 hostages at the time.
Right.
There was a real political thing going on.
Yeah.
And when I wrestled the Iron Sheik, Eye of the Tiger hit, and I won the WWE title. The whole wrestling world changed. And at that moment, I went, oh, my gosh, my career is never going to be the same. And it was like a rocket that took off to the moon, and I circled the moon. I'm heading toward Saturn and all points in between. It's still going on.
By the way, it was the good guys against the bad guys years ago. That was the imaging of wrestling. And you were the good guy. You like kids, take your vitamins. There was a point you did a little pivot to the, you know, the bad guy side. And LeBron James said 4 years ago, he goes, for 1 year I was a villain. I don't like being a villain. You were always a better good guy. I felt you embraced that better.
Well, the political landscape was different with LeBron. I mean, he was leaving a city that he loved and he grew up in, so they were mad.
Right.
But my thing was, I had a built-in following, you know, that really, really loved me for years and years and generations and generations. And then when I went on TV and said, the training, the prayers, and the vitamins, I did it for the money. The people freaked out. But then when they saw Hollywood Hogan and how cool I was and the bad guy thing, they started cheering me, you know? So I'd wrestle The Rock and Triple H and Stone Cold and The Undertaker, and the people would cheer for both of us. So the lines got really blurred,
they
you know?
Did.
But they never really booed me as a bad guy. They thought the character was really cool, the Hollywood Hogan character.
By the way, Rock, you are pre-Rock. Did Rock ever come to you?
I'm pre-everybody. just kidding.
But you really did. You were the guy, you know, people have imitated Michael Jordan in basketball.
Right, right.
Kobe sounds like him. I feel like everybody took your brand and said, I'm going to do some of that. Did you sense that? Was there bitterness? Were you okay with it?
No, it kind of like, they really didn't take my brand, but at the time it was just wrestling and taking the guy down, getting the body slam, rolling him up, who was the better wrestler. And then all of a sudden, I would slam somebody, but then I'd kind of look at the crowd with a goofy look, and the look got more of a reaction than the move did. So I went, oh my gosh, that's what they want. They want the physicality, plus they want to be involved and interactive and entertained. So The Rock, I kicked the door open because, you know, with the wrestling, I kicked the door open, the entertainment part. I also kicked the door open because I made like 15 or 16 little kid movies.
Right.
Then The Rock came along and he ripped the door off the hinges. I mean, he went bang, man. I said, and the thing was, the coolest thing was, one of the times I wrestled Madison Square Garden, I threw my headband out, and an 8-year-old Rock caught my headband.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He tells the story right before the last Jumanji. They were doing a press tour, and he tells the story about when he caught the headband. It's really pretty funny.
Listen, there's a lot of good memories, but it also takes a wear and tear on your body. And when you decided to step down, was a lot of it just, hey, man, I'm worn out. You're like an old NFL player. Like, I'm worn out.
Well, I just walked in here on one crutch.
Okay.
So I'm going in for back surgery number 10. And I didn't get the memo that said it was all fake. I had this knee cut on 5 times, then replaced it. This knee 3 times cut on, then replaced it. Both hips done. I'm going on my 10th back surgery, plus all kind of stuff from getting kicked and hit. I've been fixed and refixed. So
yeah.
It's tough on you. It really is. And these young wrestlers, young sports entertainers that are going crazy and diving off the top ropes. I just pray for them that they stay healthy.
By the way, you've done mostly very brilliant things in business. You did pass on the George Foreman grill.
Oh, stop.
That's what they told me.
Will you stop? That's not true. Do you believe everything you read, brother?
No.
My kids were upset because I was always late picking them up for school. So I said, okay, I'm going to beat all these soccer moms today. So I went to McDonald's, got the burgers, and had a little cooler, had everything ready. I got to school like at 2:30 instead of 3:30 to get my kids. All of a sudden, all the soccer moms were behind me. I got my kids home. They were excited because I finally got there early. And when I got home, I pressed the old school recorder machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Hulk, this is Sam Perlmutter. I got a couple things. I've got a grill and I've got a blender. And I'm going to call you and George to see who wants it. Well, I wasn't there to answer the call. So when I called Sam back, I said, hey, Sam, what's up with all that stuff, man? I'll take the grill. He goes, well, I called George and George took the grill. So basically, $550 million later, you know, George got the George Foreman lean, mean grilling machine, and I got a blender with a AA battery that you put one scoop of protein in, it would fart and turn off, you know? So I didn't pass on anything, brother, just for the record, for the thousandth time. I didn't pass on anything. I missed the phone call.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I want to say this. WWE 2K20 is available in 3 weeks. Pre-order now. It's a new video game with you.
Well, you know what this is going to do? It's got all the superstars from all the generations. This actually bonds the family together, brother.
Look at this.
The grandfather and grandma that used to watch me, their son and daughters, and now the new generation of kids, there's three or four generations that are going to have fun watching Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Mankind, China, Triple H, Stone Cold. I mean, this is the cat's meow as far as wrestling. If you want to get up to speed with what the wrestling business is all about, this WWE 2K20 game that's coming out, this is the home run of all home runs. I mean, that looks better than I did back in my head.
I was going to say, good Lord, he's totally cut. I got 45 seconds left. Andre was the strongest. You lifted him and slammed him, the only guy to do that. He was the strongest, right? Andre was the strongest.
He was really hard to deal with, yes.
Okay, so and he weighed four.
Well, he went between 500 and almost 700, depending on his diet.
But he was a nice guy.
He could be. The last 10 years, him and I got along great. When I first started, I was a little arrogant and cocky as a youngster, and he kept me in line.
Kept you in line like?
Like, I mean, beat the tar out of me in the ring to teach me a lesson, brother. But he was a great guy. I miss him so much. I mean, it's just, I see his picture and it's just hard to watch. You know, he was a really great friend and a really great
God,
person.
Look at you guys. Look at you. Friday Night SmackDown, Fox premieres tonight, 8 Eastern. Absolute pleasure. You're a good guy. Everybody I know in the entertainment business speaks highly of you, and I'm happy for everything. 6 WWE World Heavyweight Championships. Thank you, Hulk.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Where's my coffee?
We'll get it for you.
Thank you, brother.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So Dak and the Cowboys host the Green Bay Packers. I like Green Bay in that game. By the way, Dak has beaten 0-2 Eli Manning, 0-4 Case Keenum, and 0-2 Josh Rosen. He hasn't beaten a quarterback that's won actually a game. And it's interesting, Jeff Schwartz talked about this yesterday. So the Cowboys have paid everybody early, right? They paid Zeke 2 years early, Jalen Smith a year early, DeMarcus Lawrence early. And they're not talking about signing Dak. And Jeff Schwartz thinks maybe the Cowboys brass, which knows personnel, they draft very well in Dallas. In fact, I'd argue they draft better than New England. The Cowboys draft better than New England. New England's got a better coach and a quarterback, but Dallas drafts better. Those 3 days of the NFL draft, Dallas is better at than New England. I think it's actually New England's very average at drafting. And they know personnel. And they know young personnel. And Jeff Schwartz says maybe Dallas knows why they're waiting to sign Dak to a huge deal.
The Cowboys not signing him right now, I think, is the best sign of that. Because they could have done something last year, this year. They could have locked him up for the future, right? And you would do that if a guy's a Pat Mahomes, right? I mean, you would Carson Wentz, like they've paid these guys as soon as they can. The Cowboys have refused to pay him. Refused to pay him. They paid the running back when analytics shows us that that is not the smart thing to do. You want to pay the quarterback and the wide receiver first. They didn't do it, right? So I think that shows you from their angle, they don't think he might be the guy.
Well, and here's the thing too. You know, Jerry watches every practice. And Tyron Smith, first rounder. Connor Williams, offensive line, second rounder. Travis Frederick, center, first rounder. Zach Martin, first rounder. Amari Cooper, first rounder. Randall Cobb, second rounder. Ezekiel Elliott, first rounder. Alael Collins was a first-round talent dropped because of off-field issues. Dak is surrounded by first- and second-round talent. And as Jerry's saying, I'll pay those guys early. Some of this, he just wants to see Dak play more and more and more because he's rolling the dice on, you know, Dak can win games, but, I mean, why wouldn't Jerry sign him before everybody? First of all, quarterback's more important than running back. And Kansas City's going to sign Mahomes before they are running backs. Philadelphia signed Wentz. Seattle, by the way, signed Russell Wilson the minute he thought he was dissatisfied. Dallas signed everybody but they signed guys that were higher draft picks, higher round guys considered better talents. And through four games this year, Dak, his passing touchdowns have gone down every game from 4-3 to 2-0. His yards have gone down every day from 400, 270, 240, 220. And his passer rating has gone down four straight games from 158 to 123 to 91 to 73. So passing yards, passing touchdowns, and passer ratings have gone down every week. Is that because everybody now, Joy, has film on Kellen Moore? Every week we get a little film on Kellen and the tricks. And it's interesting. I don't know. I like Green Bay in this game, but it is interesting. Dallas has been very good with their money. They've been very good drafting, and they're waiting on Dak. Now, maybe they'll pop it after this weekend. There'll be a big contract, and I do think they're going to sign him. But Jerry's all about leverage, and I think with Zeke, he didn't feel he had a ton of leverage because Zeke wasn't going to come, and Zeke was in Mexico, and maybe signing Zeke was a sign that Jerry has apprehensions about Dak. Like, I got to get him in here. This kid, I got to get in here. So, and I do think Jerry's going to sign Dak, and I do think Dak's a franchise quarterback. But again, if you're waiting for jaw dropping, you're not going to get it. Yeah, that's not what he is. And, you know, the difference between good and great is 8 years people are trying to figure out Russell Wilson. 8 years. 8 years of film on Russell Wilson. And this is his best year. Last night may have been his greatest night. Wade Phillips, 70 years old, but in this league for 30 years. He's played Russell Wilson 12 times. He's got Aaron Donald. He's got Marcus Peters. He's got Aqib Talib. And he's got Eric Weddle. He's got Clay Matthews. Can't stop him. I mean, that's great. Like Kobe Bryant's last game, 60. Like, what great is, oh, yeah, I got film, but I can't do anything about it. Because usually, kid comes in the league, you get film, they go back, and then some just, that's the ceiling. And then the great one's Mahomes. It's like, you know, you not much I can do about that. That's why it's very difficult for me. I got to see like 15 starts. I was very cool on Dak, even the 13-3 year. I'm like, I don't know. O-line's great. Zeke's great. I don't know. And then last year we got Amari Cooper and I'm like, all right, this works. He's a grown up. He's good in front of the mic. I can handle it, but it's fun. It'll be fun this Sunday to watch that.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Drew Bledsoe was a number one pick back in 1993 of the New England Patriots. He was a Super Bowl champ, played a decade and a half, and a four-time Pro Bowler. He's also done some high school coaching. He's got a very successful winery business up in Washington State. And I want to bring him in here. You know, it's funny, Drew. I was talking to Brock Huard earlier, and he was talking about all these young quarterbacks, and he said, you know, when I was in high school, I started 20 games. He goes, Trevor Lawrence started 50. He goes, now the 7-on-7 camps. I'm watching, Drew, I'm watching all these young quarterbacks, and they just look better earlier than they've ever looked my entire life. These sophomores in college now, they look like NFL guys. How many games did you start in high school, Drew?
In high school, I started one my sophomore year, and then I got hurt, and then 9, and then 10. So, what's that, 21 games in high school?
Yeah, guys are starting 50. Did you have a lot of 7-on-7 summer camps, or did you play other sports?
No, I played other sports, but we did a little 7-on-7. My dad ran a football camp in Washington, so we'd go to that every summer, and then we'd do 7-on-7 like probably four times over the course of the summer. So I did a little bit of it, but certainly nothing like what these guys are doing now. And, you know, when you see these young guys come in and they're so well prepared, what it's really about in playing quarterback is it's about the number of reps you get. It's about the number of times you get to see a particular picture so you know where to throw the ball and when to throw it. And the more reps you get, you know, if you get enough reps, you can sort of see the future. You can see where a guy is going to be and predict where he's going to be. If you don't have enough reps, you can't do that. And so that's why these guys are so much more game ready when they get to college and then on into the NFL. They just have a lot more reps now than they ever did before.
Yeah, and that's why so few are missing. 19 of the last 20 first-round quarterbacks, Paxton Lynch the exception, have all hit. By the way, Jared Goff lost last night. I like him. Do you like him?
Yeah, I like his game a lot. You know, I know you've talked to in the past few days just about the fact that the Rams did have to give up a couple offensive linemen in order to sign the guys that they signed. So he's not getting the same protection he got maybe a year ago. But I really like his game. Very, very accurate. He's obviously got great weapons around him. But I really like what he's doing. And he's obviously got a brilliant young mind calling plays for him. And that obviously helps out quite a bit.
By the way, Gardner Minshew went to Washington State, and it's interesting because Washington State doesn't even get the most publicity in their own state. They're kind of like an Auburn to a Bama. Washington gets a lot more press. It's in Seattle. They're on TV more. Did you see Gardner Minshew being this good this quick?
You know, it's pretty funny. You know, Gardner is one of those guys, and I know you've come across people like this in your own business, in your own life. You know, when I met him, he's one of those guys, when you meet him, you immediately know this guy's going to be successful at something, right? And, you know, I mean, and I equate it when Tom Brady came in as a rookie, you know, I'm on record, I think everybody's on record, did not see this level of success. You know, I didn't see him, going down as one of the greatest of all time, but I knew he was going to be successful in life. He just kind of had that. That aura about him, and Gardner was that way. When I met him, I was like, okay, this, you know, if I could buy futures in a kid, I'd buy futures in Gardner Minshew. I wouldn't predict whether that was going to be football, and I wouldn't have seen this level of success coming for him. But I knew he was going to be successful in life. But man, the way he's playing right now, it's electric. If I could grow a mustache, I would call it. I just can't grow one. It looks awful if I try.
Yeah, no, he's got a little Baker Mayfield. He's got good feet. He's accurate. He's got a good little attitude. And he just bounces around the pocket well. I'm watching some college footage. He's just very, very comfortable moving around. He's very comfortable. He's accurate when you give him a little space. And again, he's not a fast guy, but he's got really nice feet. Moves his pocket well, sees the field. So these stories are great, these young quarterbacks succeeding. By the way, the one team that you don't want to be a young quarterback against is the New England Patriots. And their defense has always been good. This year, it's really special. Is there a secret sauce you know about or hear? Because you're still connected to the organization.
Well, you not want to be a young quarterback against the Patriots, you don't even want to be an old quarterback. I went to the home opener against the Steelers, and I watched Ben Roethlisberger, who's as good as anybody has been for the last, 12, 15 years. And I'm looking down from up above, and there's nobody open. I mean, they're playing tight man coverage. There is nobody open in that secondary. And I think you'd share the same opinion that I do. There's no superstars. They just play really, really good team defense. Their secondary is special. Belichick is more involved. But one of the guys that's really interesting, Colin, that's helping him out on the defensive side is Jerod Mayo, their linebacker. I got to spend some time with him. We went to Israel with Mr. Kraft, and I got to spend a lot of time with Jerod. He's brilliant. And I didn't know him before that. But so here's a guy. This is interesting. I think you'll like this little tidbit. When Jerod Mayo was in high school, his hobby, he was a white hat hacker. And what that means, so he's a computer hacker, right? But instead of breaking in to try and steal stuff, he would break into companies' systems, and then he would report to them where their weak spots were in their computer system.
Wow.
That was his hobby in high school. He's an amazing athlete, amazing linebacker, but he's a closet nerd. But he's helping out with that defense. And I think if he chooses to be, I think you could see Jerod Mayo becoming a guy that's a head coach in the NFL before too long.
God, that's a great story. How about that? A do-gooder. We need more of those in society.
Yeah, no doubt. Right?
I'm watching Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's the opposite of you. Russell Wilson, they've questioned his height. They've questioned, you came out number one pick, big, tall, statuesque pocket guy. He's a runaround guy. But I was saying, I went and saw a magician in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, Matt Franco at the Link, and he started doing magic at 6. He's now 31. 25 years. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. The kid, he was so comfortable with cards in his hands that he could do anything with them. I'd never seen any magician like this. And when I watched Russell Wilson, people told him he was too small in high school, too small in college, too small in the NFL. So he's had to basically create this style. And I go back and look at his high school video and his college video. He's been the same quarterback from Pete Carroll to his college coaches to Barry Alvarez. I don't even know how to classify him. Steve Young's the only thing I've seen like him. Do we call him a running quarterback? How do we describe him?
Well, first of all, and full disclosure, I'm awful at fantasy football. There turns out there's no translation from playing football to playing fantasy, at least for me. But when he was a rookie and he was in the preseason, I watched him play in the preseason. And, you know, I think it was before Pete even named him the starter. I was like, oh, I'm going to draft that kid. I'm like, what are you doing? You're drafting the Seahawks backup quarterback? Like, no, I watch this kid. He's going to be special. And he really has been, and he continues to get better. But one of the amazing things about him is he moves around so much and makes plays with his feet, but he's always keeping his eyes downfield. He's always looking to make the throw. He's not moving to run. He's actually, you know, sliding around to make a play with his arm. One of the things that bugs me sometimes is when I hear a guy called a dual threat quarterback.
Yeah.
Usually what that means is he can run, but he can't throw.
Right.
Right. Russell is a guy that is a true, and you said Steve Young, and I think that is a good comparison. For Russell and Steve, you hear him talk about it. He didn't become a Hall of Fame quarterback until he learned to do that, until he learned to move around and then deliver the ball early in his career. And he readily admits this. He was just kind of a runaround guy, but he became a precision passer later in his career. And that's why he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Russell he's that guy. The other thing that's amazing, he moves around so much. Do you ever recall seeing him get hit hard?
Never, ever.
He almost never gets hit hard. He's so elusive, and he's able to protect himself, and that's why he's been able to be on the field all the time. You know, he came in the same year as RG3, and I remember watching RG3. He'd run around, and he would get blown up. I'm like, man, this kid's not going to last very long. He gets hit too hard.
Yeah. I mean, you were 6'5". You got hit. You know the story. I mean, this league is brutal. I watched Lamar Jackson against Kansas City first drive get popped once. I'm like, okay, that's just not acceptable. You can't – I mean, you're a big quarterback who got hit. We had a piece of video this week, Tom Brady getting blown up by Buffalo. I mean, Tom, and you are 6'5". You're men. So, and Russell's a little guy. I think baseball actually helps him, Drew. He's great at sliding, seriously. It's a great
– Yeah, I think that's part of it. He really has a sense for how to protect himself and how to avoid getting the big hits. And I just – And plus, you know, he's one of those guys that's so easy to cheer for. He does everything right. My kids are mostly grown now, but he's one of those guys that, you know, you could point to like, hey, yeah, do it like this guy does it. He's special.
Finally, Drew Bledsoe joining us. Drew, you had a huge arm, college, high school, pro. You had an elite A-plus arm, top two or three when you played. Mahomes has that. Now, we always think great arm is an advantage, but there can be a burden to it. Joe Namath, Brett Favre, a lot of picks. Take me to your arm and the upside, the downside, because I see when I see Patrick throw it like he does, the ball he just can spin it. It's just so pretty to watch. And there was no throws you couldn't make. But how did you manage your arm? Because in high school, you know, college, maybe you didn't have to, but sometimes I do feel the arm can be a little bit of a burden if it's too great.
It can get you in trouble. You know, you feel like you're you can just make every throw, so you can just throw it right through somebody. And I had a game in college against the University of Montana, and we were far better than they were. Came out, and I think I completed like my first 12 passes. So then I just figured, oh, well, I can just throw it anywhere. I ended up throwing 5 interceptions because these little tiny linebackers from the University of Montana, because I was like, oh, no, I'm bulletproof, man. I can't. There's no way they can make a play on this ball. So it can get you in trouble. But Mahomes, look, I don't tip my cap to very many guys when it comes to throwing the football. There are only a couple guys where I look at it like, okay, that guy can really throw it. Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys. And then what Mahomes is doing, I think one thing that happens with people in your profession, and I don't want to lump you with everybody else, but in your profession, a lot of times there are these superlatives that are thrown around too much.
Right.
You know, the next guy, the next this, the next that. And I think sometimes the truly great ones can get lost in the wash of all these superlatives. But what I'm watching with Mahomes, he's changing the game, man. He's different than anybody else I've seen come into the league. I mean, the only guy that I would equate him to would maybe be Elway when he was young. in terms of what he can do throwing the football, and could do it on the move. He could do it from the pocket, and just makes every throw. And it looks really just, it's fun to watch, man. I still love watching good quarterbacks, and watching Mahomes right now is really fun.
Yeah. Helps to have Andy Reid too. Great play designer, Drew Bledsoe. How's the wine business?
The wine business is good, man. I'm out here in, Boston right now, actually running around schlepping wine, selling wine. I wish you hadn't sold your shops there in Connecticut, man. I'd swing back down there. We sold a lot of wine those couple days, man. It was fun.
Drew Bledsoe, good seeing you.
Before I jump off, you want to hear the most amazing stat I've heard maybe in a year? Since Chip Kelly, and this is painful for me because it happened to my Washington State Cougars, since Chip Kelly has been at UCLA, the Bruins are 2-4. In games where they've been behind by 30 points. They've won 2 out of 6 games and they're behind by 30. Guess what the rest of the NCAA is in that span of time in games where a team was behind by 30?
I mean, what?
They're 0-440.
So they came
and
back.
The other 440 times teams have been down by 30 points, they've lost. And Chip Kelly somehow has brought his team back from 30 points down twice in the 6 times they've been down by that much.
Well, they beat your Cougars that way. It was a weird
they
game.
They did. It was just humiliating. I hated it.
Yeah, I get it.
The game was over. The game was over like 4 different times.
They shouldn't even.
And I was actually at the local watering hole watching with my buddies. And as that started to happen, I had to leave. And then as I'm driving home, all of a sudden my phone started blowing up because that's when they returned the kick. And then they came back and friggin' beat us. I couldn't believe that. We're up by 32 points in the middle of the third quarter. No way that should ever happen.
No, they should not even count that. It's just outrageous.
Yeah, let's start a petition to just eliminate that one from the record. Give us the win.
Drew Bledsoe, good talking to you, buddy.
Thanks, Colin, bud.